Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. We are quite possessive. He joins us weekly. The films Elvis, Hallelujah, Leonard Cohen, A Journey, A Song, and Flux Gourmet. One quick question. Where do you find these?
I find them mostly, well, either in movie theaters or streaming in mainstream venues, with occasional exceptions to that. Our third film today, for example, Flux Gourmet, is definitely out there. I saw it on one of the major streaming services, but it's so strange, I'm just very pleased that it got into distribution at all. But Elvis and Hallelujah are both very mainstream movies and are playing in movie theaters, and you know, they're both perfectly worth seeing. Before I forget, I would just love to, every once in a great while, maybe once a year, I plug one of my books. One of my books is called Rock and Roll Movies, and it is from Rutgers University Press and is, I'm sure, available all over the place, especially on the web, Amazon and all that. And both Elvis and Hallelujah obviously are a little bit too late for my book. On rock and roll movies, but if my book ever has a second edition, they'll both be in there, most likely. Anyway, Elvis is a movie directed by Baz Luhrmann, and he is a director with a very distinctive style. I met Baz way back in the early 90s when he made his very first film. We showed it at the New York Film Festival when I was on the selection committee there, and I moderated a press conference with him, and I remember him as being a perfectly nice fellow. And since then, he has really followed up on the promise that we saw back then in Strictly Ballroom. His movies tend to be just full of glitz and just like a tree decorated with every possible decoration that there is. They move fast. They zip along. They're overloaded with material, especially audio-visual material. I'll mention some of his movies, Romeo plus Juliet back in the 90s, Moulin Rouge, more recently, well, there's been a couple of other ones since then, but those are the ones. Great Gatsby also he made, but these are movies which are just overloaded with glitz and material and all of that. So Elvis is very much in that mold. It's a full-on Baz Luhrmann movie. There's a new cut every half a second. And the movie's well over 2.5 hours long, so that's a lot of different shots we're looking at. But what is beneath all of that enormous amount of audiovisual energy is basically a biopic about Elvis Presley. You'll be surprised, Jill, to hear that that is, in fact, the subject of Elvis. And he is one of those people like Groucho Marx, for example, who is known all over the world by two names, but all you have to say is that first name, and everybody knows who you are talking about. So this is a biopic about Elvis Presley. And it stars Austin Butler as Elvis Presley. But really, just as important a role as that is his manager, his notorious manager, Colonel Tom Parker, who is played in this movie by Tom Hanks. So we'll get back to him in a minute. As for the story of the movie Elvis, it shows a little bit about his very, very early life and his sort of somewhat troubled home. His father had spent time in jail, and he always felt that this was a kind of a weight bearing down upon him. But he didn't have that miserable childhood. But oh, from a pretty early stage of his life, he knew he really wanted to be a singer, and he worked really hard at it. And we see a bit of that material in the movie. And then we see him having his legendary sessions with Sun Records down in Memphis, Tennessee. And that just produced what, to my mind, to this day, are some of his greatest, greatest, greatest ever recordings. And then we see him moving over to RCA Victor and becoming an enormous mainstream star. And then we finally see him in his later Las Vegas years, when he had gained a lot of weight and was not very happy with himself, and he was abusing prescription medications. Apparently, this is not really in the movie, but apparently he never thought of himself as having a drug problem because they were prescribed by doctors. But he really did have a drug problem. And then, of course, he dies when he's in his 40s, and that's the sad ending of the movie, although we're more told about that than shown that. So that's what Elvis is. It is basically a biopic of Elvis Presley. Now, as for Austin Butler in the title role, he's good. he doesn't look all that much like Elvis Presley to me. He doesn't quite have the right mouth for it and so forth. Elvis Presley always had a kind of a sneer that was part of his great appeal. Butler doesn't quite have that, but he's good. The trick in any sort of a biopic about a hugely famous person is that you want to blend impersonation with real psychological interpretation. I think Butler does okay in both departments. Not great, but he does okay. But the real news here is Tom Hanks as Colonel Tom Parker. He is an older man. He's older than Elvis Presley throughout the movie, and by the end of the film, he's a pretty old man. And he is played by Tom Hanks, who is almost unrecognizable. The Tom Hanks that we knew all those years ago, oh, he is just made so flabby and so sort of worn out looking throughout the film, really. And he is an operator. He clearly is a dishonest character. One of the little mysteries that runs through the movie, and it's finally cleared up for us, is why he does everything he possibly can to prevent Elvis Presley from going on any sort of a tour outside the United States. Well, we finally find out the reason for that, and it has to do with Colonel Tom Parker's endless chicanery that's always going on. So there's stuff like that in it, and it's just really interesting to watch Tom Hanks do such a totally unglamorous and really unappealing and unattractive performance. But he's Tom. He makes it appealing. He makes it attractive. So Elvis is not, I would say, a great biopic, but it's a good biopic. It carries us through the character. To my mind, Elvis Presley remains to this day the greatest rock solo singer that there ever was. And of course, I refer not so much to the late Las Vegas period of his career. I'm referring to the earlier periods of his career, both the very early period when he was recording for Sun Records, and then the great flowering of his career in the later part of the 1950s and into the early 1960s. So that's, I think, his greatest periods, and they're nicely pretty well covered in this movie. People who are not familiar with Elvis Presley's life will get a pretty good idea of it from this movie. I think it's a reasonably accurate telling of some of the highlights in his life and career. People who are purists will not be pleased with all kinds of aspects of this. There's already a lot of controversy going on about how the movie treats his relationship with African-American performers. Elvis Presley was actually a true culture hero in the 1950s in the South, recording songs by black musicians. There were radio stations that wouldn't play his music simply because he was singing songs by black musicians. And so he was in that way a real pioneer and in his own way a real booster of black music in America. But, you know, then later on people say, well, he was just appropriating their great work. And the movie covers that but doesn't cover it all that well. I personally think that there should be no fuss made over this movie. There's time for lots of more movies on that subject. There's time for lots of more movies on Elvis Presley. And for now, this movie, Elvis, will do. And by the way, the songs in it are sung to some extent, some of them by Austin Butler, sounding pretty much like Elvis Presley, and some of them by Elvis Presley. We hear some of his actual recordings being lip-synced by Austin Butler in the movie. Then a lot of the music in the film is a blend that they did electronically of the two voices. Austin Butler has said sometimes he can't tell what's his voice and what's Elvis Presley's actual voice, especially in the very early part of the film is when we hear less of Presley's own voice because those early Sun recordings made down in Memphis were not of the very highest quality. But we do get to hear a lot of Elvis's music, and we get to hear a lot of Elvis's sound-alike music in this pretty good movie about Elvis Presley. Okay, our next movie also deals with pop music. Hallelujah, Leonard Cohen, A Journey, A Song. And here we have a whole movie, and it's almost 2 hours long, basically about one single song, which is Leonard Cohen's famous legendary anthem of pop music, Hallelujah. Leonard Cohen is a really interesting movie, and there have been other full-length documentaries about Leonard Cohen before now. This is just the latest one. And this is the first one, certainly, to just focus on one song, and especially on this particular song. So what we have is a focus on the song Hallelujah, but we get some background into Leonard Cohen's life, how he got into music, the kind of life that he led early on, and how he came to do a song like Hallelujah. But mainly we have a history of the song. And it's a pretty interesting history, I have to say. Now, I really like a lot of Leonard Cohen's music. I know you don't, Jill. I like a lot of it. I've never really been into him, but, you know, I think it's pretty good, and it's really helped a number of movies that his music has appeared in over the years. This song, Hallelujah, interestingly, because it's one of his two or three most absolutely famous songs that he ever did, and he was a very major artist. It originally appeared on an album called Various Positions that Leonard Cohen released in the middle 80s, 1984, and Columbia Records disliked the whole album so much that even though the album was finished, paid for, they simply refused to release it in the United States. So here you have this album that they had paid for, which they hated so much, especially the head of Columbia at that time, that they refused to release it in the U.S. It was released in England, and it did okay there, and eventually it was released in a few other countries. Eventually, Leonard Cohen himself scrounged around and found a tiny little record company that would at least put out a few copies of it so the movie could, so the album could get into circulation. But that's a fascinating history for this album, which contained what became one of his most famous and even legendary songs. It was not released in the United States when it first came out in 1984. That said, it certainly did get released, and the song began to get circulation. And what the movie shows us is how this movie became the phenomenon that it did, largely through cover versions by a whole lot of other musicians. And a lot of them are pretty famous covers as well. There were some very, very, very major people who did this. Katie Lang was one of the later ones to do it, I think. But other people did it too. And so it was partly through them singing it. And by the way, they sometimes sang it with other lyrics, because Leonard Cohen himself was sometimes changing the lyrics of the song and would come up with new versions of it. It appeared, this is quite an interesting part of the film, it appeared in the animated film Shrek. Has Hallelujah in it. And for that, one of the directors of Shrek is in this documentary, Hallelujah. And she says, well, we took out the naughty bits, which means they took out parts of the song that are a little bit open to interpretation in ways that might not be completely family friendly. So they kind of did that, and they shortened it, and they made various changes. But Shrek gave it another one of its huge boosts that it got. So a song that was virtually unreleased when it was first put onto an album, and then was covered by very major artists, and then appeared in the movie Shrek, and then became, again, a kind of an anthem. Along the way, we get other facts about Leonard Cohen's life, particularly how he spent years and years in a Buddhist monastery and became a real, genuine, serious spiritual worker and seeker and scholar in that way. That's just a minor part of the movie, but it's in there, and I'm glad that it was. What the movie doesn't tell so much about is his drug use and stuff like that, but maybe that's just as well. In any case, the movie Hallelujah is not so much about Leonard Cohen, although it's very much about him. He's in it all the way through, of course. Old footage, because he died a few years ago. But it is mainly about the song Hallelujah. And if you love the song Hallelujah, or if you just want to know more about the song Hallelujah, this is the movie for you. And our final film today, Jill, I just want to touch on it because it's so interesting in certain ways. Flux Gourmet. Weird title, totally weird movie. Directed by Peter Strickland, who specializes in, guess what, really, really weird movies. The first one that put him on my radar was a film called The Duke of Burgundy, named after a kind of butterfly, back in 2014. Since then, he made In Fabric, which is basically about a haunted dress. And he's made a few other movies as well. And he's one of these directors who impresses me, writer-directors, I should say, because he writes and directs his own films, by having a sheer force of imagination and being willing to do daring things that you can't imagine anybody even dreaming up, much less actually getting the financing to make a full-length movie out of, and then getting that movie into general circulation with the public. So anyway, he impresses me very much for that reason. And I find his movies always dissatisfactory. Well, The Royal Burgundy is really excellent, but in other ways, they're not fully satisfactory, but they're just so strange, they keep me following them every single step of the way. So what is Flux Gourmet about? It is about, and even this is hard to describe, it is about a collective of people who go to a sort of a foundation and to develop their art through workshops and improvisations and things like that. And what they are is they are a sonic collective who specialize in sounds of food and digestion. So we have a whole movie here, and yes, parts of it are really pretty disgusting, about digestion and food and sounds of digestion and food and the way these people have, they're a little collective, and so they have their rivalries and their jealousies and their conflicts and their creative disputes and things like that all the time that they're working with this high-tech equipment to get sounds of food and digestion into the world. They do theater pieces that are based on this idea. So it's a very, very bizarre movie. It is for adventurous viewers only, but I think one of our problems in America today and probably in the world today is that viewers are not adventurous enough. Take a chance with something a little bit different. If you can handle the yucky parts of Flix Gourmet, you might have a pretty good time. And so that, Jill, is my very one thing after another story this week.
For which we thank you, as always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films Elvis, Hallelujah, Leonard Cohen, A Journey, A Song, and Flux Gourmet.